For such a time as this, just touch the scepter.
I figured we'd have trouble with the timing, so I did it that way. Now, Brother Leon, from Tabio spoke about person picking up and hearing it and leading it. Are you able to do that? Well, afterward, I'd like to sing it afterward. Okay, and if not, we can just play it again. But called to the kingdom for such a time as this. Wasn't sure if maybe the school boards needed more teachers, if they're looking for teachers, and this is a perfect subject to address at the end of this day. I didn't know. But I greet you in Jesus' name. You have heard much today about the academics, how to do things, better practices. I'm not going to focus on the teaching practices because I know nothing about it. I'm going to focus on the call. The call. The verse is taken from Esther chapter 4, verse 14. Thou art called to the kingdom for such a time as this. Does anyone know what the Jewish feast is on March 23 to 24? 2024 starts in the evening of 2023 and goes to the evening of, starts March 23 at sundown and goes to March 24 sundown again. The Jewish feast. Purim, perfect, thank you. That Jewish holiday is observed today because of what happened in Esther 4:14. So now, We know the story. I'm not going to go there because of lack of time. We need to be dismissed by 5. And I have about an hour and a half's worth of material here, so please bear with me. We all know what happened. Haman wanted the Jews destroyed. And he used the method of deciding when he would have the Jews exterminated. And he called the people in, and they used the method of Pur, P-U-R. Literally means lot, the using of the lot. And they decided, and this was in month 1, and they decided in month 12, they're going to go out and kill the Jews. So Haman had that decided. And then he went to the king, and he got the okay from him to do that. And he got his royal seal, and they decided to do that. And we know the story. Mordecai and Esther worked together. The proceedings that happened for Esther. And she got to be queen. And now we have this decree that the Jews will be exterminated. They're still trying to get rid of the Jews, aren't they? Hasn't happened. And Mordecai told Esther, he said, "You're going to go into the king, aren't you?" And she said, "How would you feel?" She's the queen, and we know what happened to the last queen. That wasn't that the scepter, you know, he got upset with the queen and got rid of her. And she said, "Well, if I go in there and he doesn't hand the royal scepter out to me, I'm gone." And Mordecai told her, he said, "You need to remember that God's going to save his people, but you and your family might be gone if you don't go in here." And he said, "Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And she planned the banquet, and you know how that went. And Haman had the privilege of taking Mordecai around the city yet and saying, "Look what happens to the man who the king delights in." Because one night the king couldn't sleep, and he asked, "So what happened to those men? What happened to the person that saved my life that day?" And they said, "Nothing." Well, the king couldn't sleep. And he went out, and Haman was coming to him to ask him, "What, we're going to get rid of the Jews here." And the king stopped him, and he said, what should we do to the man whom the king honors?" And Haman said, "Well, this got to be me." And he said, and well, then the king told Haman, "Well, you do that to Mordecai then." You see the timing in this? And Esther planned the banquet, and they came to the first one, and she said, "Come tomorrow," or whenever it was, "come again." And she pled for her people, and the king said, "Who is this man? Who is this man?" And the Mordecai said, "Well, this is," or Esther said, "It's Haman. Haman is planning this. Well, go out and hang him." And they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had planned for Mordecai. And that was the end of Haman, but it wasn't the end of the Jews' problem. The Jews still had a problem on their hand because the king had said, "You're going to get rid of the Jews." The people had a right to do that. In month one, that was planned. In month three of the year, Esther had her banquet with the king. And what happened there? And then she got the go-ahead from the king in month three to get that the Jews could defend themselves, and they could go kill, and they could. So they had a three-quarter year that both of these laws were in effect. The Jews' enemies were planning how they're going to get rid of the Jews, and the Jews were planning how to get rid of their enemies. That was like 9 months they had there. This was in month three, and they're going to month 12 is when that came into effect. And it said that there was light in Shushan. And now today, the Jews have a feast that they observe because of what happened here. And Mordecai's message to Esther is ringing out today. "Who knows, but you have been called to the kingdom for such a time as this." Do you see your calling? Do you see your teaching job as a calling? And the question, and you know, as youth boys, we talked about this. You know, what makes teaching more of a calling than other jobs? Well, we're going to argue that until there's youth 30 years from now But the fact of the matter is that teaching is a calling. The fact of the matter is that teaching is a calling. And the Lord bless you for taking it that way. And as I see teachers taking up their calling seriously and with responsibility, and they lead out in what I heard today, and the Lord bless each of you for sharing and for being here. The church will only be as strong as the children growing up. And a few points I want to take from the book of Esther. First point is you need to look at the big picture, the whole scope. And Esther needed to do that. She needed to look away from herself and what might happen to her. And, you know, when you get into a teaching, I'm thinking especially now of maybe an 18 or 19-year-old sister that's been asked to teach. And you're probably trembling. And how's this going to go? And you go in here with trepidation. And you finally start teaching. And then comes that first school board meeting. When the school board sits around the table and they have their portfolio binders out and they're taking notes. And you need to give a report. How is this going? Maybe 3 days into the term. And you're trembling. How's this going to go? Do you think that's a bit the way Esther felt? I think schools work a lot better if there's attitudes like that. Just a little bit of trembling. Don't feel out of place. And maybe Brother Jonathan, you feel trembling yet too when you meet with the school board. I'm not sure. But there needs to be a working together. But the courage that Esther had needs to be displayed in our school teachers. And the humility. The character that Esther displayed is something that our teachers need to have. That role model. That just the courage and the courage to do what the school board is asking them to. Sometimes, like we heard today, the teachers and the school boards, there could be differences of opinions, but you will be blessed as you encourage, as you take courage and you move on, and as you serve the school. Willing to take advice, Esther was good at that. Mordecai came and said, "You're going to have to do this," and she took that advice. As I was thinking about this topic, a person came to my mind that was the first Mennonite school teacher that we know of, and his name was Christopher Dock. And he was teaching in the 1700s, and on your handout, I have given you a list that Christopher Dock compiled, rules of conduct for children. And I'd rather you not read them now, and I'm not going to go over it, but because it's going to take your time, and some of it's a little humorous, and I would like to finish here by 5, so if you can take that home and look it over. Christopher Dock did not have teacher's manuals, he did not have achievement tests, and he pioneered in the field of Christian education. And so pronounced was his success as a schoolmaster that a Philadelphia printer begged him to write a book about his methods. And his methods of teaching are still being used by Christian educators. And Christopher Dock took his responsibility seriously. And I want you to just with me, I have a few scenarios here that you no doubt face as you teach. Little Peter, that just can't seem to understand the lesson that you are teaching him, might just someday be the Sunday school superintendent at church. You need to think about that. As you're teaching him, grade 1 and 2 teachers, they're just not getting it. And you sit back and you get exasperated, and Peter might be in front of the church someday, and he might be the Sunday school superintendent. The upper grade boy that seems to defy your authority as a teacher might well be the officiating bishop at your son or daughter's wedding? Might be. Don't throw it away. Might be. We have people here who talked today who said they have former students here. And so they're teachers now. The girls in grade 7 that are so affected by peer pressure today will be the school teachers of your children in just a few short years. Be faithful in steering them in the right direction. It's of utmost importance. Christopher Dock, search him out. There's much literature about Christopher Dock. I'm not going to go there. I have some things here, but you can search that out yourself. And these 100 necessary rules of conduct for children, I found, and I was blessed by it. Brother Dock was a man of prayer, and he prayed much for his students. Each evening, it was his custom to remain in the classroom to pray. He would kneel and ask God to forgive him for any act of injustice or of neglect toward any pupils in his school that day. He also asked, as he pronounced each pupil's name, that God would help him on the morrow to do the best thing for each one. And that was that's what guided his life. And one evening in the fall of 1771, Christopher Dock did not return home from school at the usual time. A search was made, and they found him in his classroom. And life had fled him, but he was kneeling in prayer. And he is now a man of 80. And he says he taught for 10 years, and then he gave it up for 10 years and went farming. And then he went back to teaching again. And he said, "I neglected the profession of teaching for 10 years, for which I often felt the smiting hand of God, which before then had served me well. May the Lord graciously overlook my neglect of the children during that time." I'm just curious. Who's a first-year teacher or second-year teacher? One, two, five? 5 years? Who's taught 5 years? Few of you? 10? Maybe one? How many years did you teach, Brother Arnold? 30? Still at it?
40.
40. The school needs people who see this as a calling, and whether you teach for 1 year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, or 20, or 30, or 40, or I don't know how long Brother Doc taught, but he took his calling seriously. While I was studying for this topic, I got the Christian School Builder, and I always appreciate the Christian School Builder. For many years, I tossed it aside. It's not for me. I'm not a teacher. There's many good articles in there. This lady was writing the article. And she went to a wedding, and she had been a former school teacher, and she was looking after her maybe 2-year-old son, who they had traveled the day before traveling to the wedding, and they were at the wedding now, and like children do sometimes, they misbehave, and she was trying to follow her child. And on the way back, she saw her old school teacher. And her school teacher said, "So you're not teaching anymore?" And she said, "No, she's not." And then the teacher said, her former teacher said, "Actually, you are still teaching, just a different kind of teaching job." And then she said, she agreed, and she smiled at her son's energy, and she said, "I guess you're right, but I don't think I'm doing as well at this teaching job." And one of her uncles spoke up, and he said, "Are you the judge of that? Are you the judge of that?" And she went on to share how she had taught school, and she thought she did a good job, and the school board was pleased. But now as she moved on with life, she found it a little more discouraging. And here's something she said in a paragraph here. "As a teacher, a mother, a wife, a church member, I feel inadequate. Don't we all at times? What really does God require of us more than to prayerfully do the best we know? And if we find ourselves coming up short, is it any glory to Him if we beat ourselves into the mud of discouragement? God is the final judge of your endeavors. If there are accomplishments, thank the Lord for it. If there are failures and disappointments, let the Lord give you the grace to accept the situation and to learn more from it. It's all about, that's all we do in life, isn't it? We keep growing. We never get to a place where we stop growing. I had a struggle today. I shared a story last Sunday evening at a church we were at River of Life, and I know there's some of you here that were there maybe. But that story's kept coming back to me, and I can't neglect it. And I want to share it because I think it illustrates a point. We're called to the kingdom for such a time as this, and I'm going to wing it because I don't have the notes. I wasn't planning on doing it this morning, but it came on so strong, I just feel I need to share it. In 1921, and some of you have heard this, but let me share it again. In 1921, David and Saveya Flood went from Sweden to the heart of Africa. And they went with another couple. David and Saveya Flood had a 2-year-old son. And they went with another couple, the Ericksons. And they went into the heart of Africa, into the Belgian Congo. And as they got into the village there, they prayed much. And they got into the village of Endolera. And the chief was so furiated with them, he said, "You can't stay here because you're going to upset the local gods." And so they went out from the mission base, they went a half a mile up the mountain, and they built their huts there. And they tried evangelizing to the people, and nothing happened. Nothing happened. And the only contact they really had with the people there was a boy that came up couple times a week. The chief would let them come up, would let him come up, and he would allow them to buy, he would sell eggs and chickens and food to them. And Saveya Flood, she was a short woman, but she had determination, and she decided that if this is the only person that I can reach, I'm going to try to reach him. And she told him about God. And in the end, this boy accepted Christ. This boy accepted Christ. But that was it. There was nothing, there was no other breakthroughs. The Ericksons got smitten with malaria. They all got hit with malaria. And the Ericksons decided to go back to the mission base. But David and Saveya Flood stayed on in that community. Saveya Flood was about to give birth to a child, and I think the chief allowed a midwife to come up to help with that. But because of the difficulties in the birth and because of the rounds of malaria, she only lasted 17 days. She died. And inside David Flood, something snapped. He said, "God has let us down." And he buried he made a crude grave for his wife and buried her. And he took his son and his 17-day-old daughter, and they went back to the mission base. And he gave and the girl's name was Aina. And he gave Aina to the Ericksons, and he said, "You look after her. I can't look after her. I'm going back to Sweden." And he not only neglected his calling, he neglected God himself. Through time, the Ericksons, about 8 months later, the Ericksons both passed away because of something unforeseen. And Aina was given to some missionaries there that were from North America. They were from the U.S. And they changed her name to Aggie. And because of complications and because they loved this girl, they took her back to North America. They brought her back to South Dakota, and they decided they're going to stay there as missionaries and as pastor in a church there, because they were afraid if they go back to Africa, they might lose Aggie. So that's how Aggie grew up in South Dakota, and she was a Christian girl, and she went to Bible schools and Bible colleges, and she met a young man by the name of Dewey Hurst. They had two children along the way. Dewey Hurst was involved in a Bible college in the Seattle area, and they were serving the Lord there. One day, there was a magazine showed up at Savea's doorstep. She didn't know who brought it, and she couldn't even read it. It was a Swedish magazine. She couldn't even read it. But as she paged through the magazine, she came upon a picture. It was a picture of a cross and a grave, and it said Savea Flood on the cross. And this got her attention. Savea Flood is her mom. So she found a faculty member at the Bible college, and she said, "What's this story say?" And he read the story. Story was told of missionaries from Sweden that went to Africa, and there they served there. It talked about the death of a mother. It talked about the missionaries leaving. But it also talked about the boy that came up to the hut a couple times a week and who was converted through the work of Savea Flood. And it said as he grew up, he convinced the chief to allow him to make a school. And he wanted to teach these children. And this boy, as he taught these children and he taught them about God and he taught them the things of life, these children went home and told their parents about God. And it says that even the chief became converted. And the article said that there was 600 Christians in that village alone. Well, that got her attention. For the Dewey and Aggie Hurst's 25th wedding anniversary, the college gave them a gift to go to Sweden. She wanted to find her father. He was still living. He came back to Sweden. He married again and had about 5 children. He came back to Sweden and left God behind. He dissipated his life with alcohol. He was in very poor health. And her and Dewey went to Sweden. And she met her brothers and sisters. And she said, "I want to go meet my father." And they said, "You may. But one thing you need to remember, you never mention the name of God. He flies into a rage when you mention the name of God." She went to see her father. And as she walked into this house littered with alcohol bottles, she said, "Papa." And he said, "I never meant to give you away." And she said, "That's okay. God looked after us." And he stiffened up and he said, "God took everything away from me." And she said, "No, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story." She said, "Your time in Africa was not in vain." She said, "Remember that boy that came, that brought us eggs and chickens? He taught the children there. These children, as they grew up, they became converted. They told their parents about God." And she said, "It is not all in vain." And her dad started to cry. And by the end of the day, he gave his heart back to God, who he had left many years before. The time came, and they had numbers of weeks together, and time came for her to go home again. Her and Dewey went home, and several weeks later, David Flood died, but he was a saint. A little while later, Dewey and Aggie Hurst were at an evangelism conference in London, England. And there was a man there speaking in French. He was giving a report about a church in the region there that used to be the Belgian Congo. And he was talking about how the spread of the gospel is going forth in the land there. And he said there's 110,000 people in their church groups. She went and met him afterward. And she said, and she spoke through an interpreter. And she said, "Does the name David and Savea Flood mean anything to you?" And he said, "Your mother told me about God." That man, she was able to meet the man that her mother had shared the gospel with her. And I realize this is not a missions conference. I just want to impress on you teachers that you've been called to the kingdom for such a time as this. That man said, "You need to come back to Africa. You need to come back. Your mother is a very honored person." And in time, she went back to Africa. And the thronging crowds were there to cheer her. And it was a grand reunion. And as she went back and she saw the cross, she even met the man who her father had hired to carry her down in a hammock down the mountainside. And the pastor there shared the verse from John chapter, I forget the reference, didn't write it down, wasn't prepared for this. But a corn of wheat falling into the ground and dying, and then what can happen out of that? Give your best and give it over to God, and God will bless your endeavors. That's you good to sing the song? Yeah.